Case number 11-1189 et al. Echo Services Operations, LLC, petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Issues raised in final opening brief of environmental petitioners. Mr. Johnson for environmental petitioners. Mr. Ray for respondent EPA. Mr. Green for industry intervener respondents. Issues raised in final joint brief of industry petitioners. Mr. Bell for industry petitioners. Mr. Knight for NACWA. Mr. Rave for respondent EPA, and Mr. Johnson for environmental intervener respondents.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Seth Johnson for environmental petitioners. The key word in RCRA's definition of solid waste is discarded, and this court has already held and reaffirmed that the word discarded unambiguously has a plain meaning of thrown out, abandoned, or disposed of. The overarching problem here is that EPA is taking materials that have been thrown out and calling them not discarded. There are two broad ways it's done this. The first one I'll talk about is that it simply deemed scrap tires, used motor oil, demolition debris, and unrecyclable remnants of used cardboard non-waste. This violates the plain text of RCRA as this court's interpreted it. EPA agrees with the case law that a material is waste if it's initially discarded, but it claims these materials aren't discarded, even though they're all thrown out by consumers before they make their way to be burned. In fact, people usually pay to properly dispose of their tires and demolition debris. People just abandon their used motor oil at service stations, and people leave used cardboard at the curb like regular old garbage. They're all post-consumer wastes that are thrown out, disposed of, or abandoned.
But eventually used in fuels.
Eventually, some of them get burned productively, but EPA, the court's case law, has held that a material, once it's been thrown out, is discarded, and it's discarded all through that process. And EPA agrees with this. It says that at JA-124. The problem here with these materials is it's just saying that the initial user did not discard them, and that's insupportable because the initial user threw them out. In the ordinary sense of the term, which is controlling under AMC1 and ABR.
Would that be true of, suppose it was indisputably true that this discarded material was in fact used as fuel. Would your view be the same?
If it was thrown out by a consumer, yeah. Yes.
Does your argument turn on whether it's thrown out by a consumer versus waste that's generated by a manufacturer and then they're reusing it?
We did not challenge that exemption, the exemption where a manufacturer generates a byproduct and then reprocesses it into its manufacturing process. We're challenging when somebody indisputably clearly throws it out in the ordinary sense of the term.
Throws it out. Suppose you take your oil down to the Jiffy Lube and you say, I'm buying some new oil from you, but you take my old oil and make sure it gets put into the recycling stream for use as a fuel. That wouldn't be thrown out, would it?
That would be. That's just like
anytime you let go of something, it's thrown out?
Not anytime.
You give it to your brother, it's thrown out. It's discarded then?
Not if you give it to your
brother.
Why
is it discarded then if you give it to the oil dealer and say, you take it and dispose it?
Because in that case, you're not treating it like a valuable commodity. That's no different from taking paper and putting it in recycling.
Why is it not treating it like a properly valued commodity if you say, I'm buying some new oil from you, you're getting my old oil, now you take it and do the right thing and get it into the use as the fuel.
You're not getting anything in return. You're just throwing it out.
You said a while ago, if I gave it to my brother, it wouldn't be discarded.
If he's going to use it in a valuable way.
Suppose he's going to take it and use it as a fuel.
If he's going to take it and use it as a fuel.
Would that be discarded then? I say, look, you're up there, you got your car up on the jack, why don't you put mine up, change the oil for me. Take my oil and put it like you're going to do yours in the fuel. Would that be just thrown away?
Yes.
You would?
That's no different.
You think that's the ordinary use of the word?
Certainly there are senses in which,
once there are senses in which it's ambiguous, that means.
This court has held that the word discarded unambiguously has its plain meaning. Your Honor, the examples you're giving me.
We haven't necessarily held that these examples fall within that plain meaning, however, have we?
No, but there's never been a case holding that post-consumer waste that goes from the consumer to another entity and then eventually winds up being burned. There's never been a case that holds that that's not waste. And that's not consistent with the ordinary meaning of the word discarded.
Which provision of the regulation are you focusing on right now?
We're focusing on...
Which one is it? It's
the exemption for scrap tires. It's parts of the traditional fuels definition where EPA said that clean demolition wood waste and used motor oil are not wastes. And we're... So those are the ones we're focusing on. And for some of these materials, EPA and its lawyers claim that the concept of discard is irrelevant. And that argument just can't have any purchase under RCRA. In RCRA, the concept of discard isn't just relevant. It's the key to the statute. EPA says that discard is irrelevant because clean demolition debris and on-spec motor oil are produced to be used as fuel. But that's insupportable. People produce demolition debris when they build and tear down buildings. They produce used motor oil when they change their oil. They're not being produced for use as fuel.
Doesn't, for the wood and oil that you're talking about, doesn't it still have to meet the legitimacy criteria?
It does. But the legitimacy criteria can't override the plain meaning of discard.
Well, let's assume we're not convinced that discard is quite as clear as you think it is. Let's just assume we think that there's enough ambiguity in the term to accommodate the agency's view about this. Don't the legitimacy, would you then what would you say? The legitimacy criteria would protect them, wouldn't they?
It would protect in certain instances, but we've raised challenges to the legitimacy criteria.
In your briefs? I know you don't like them, but I couldn't really find any specifics about that.
We challenged them as arbitrary and capricious and unlawful.
Yeah, but why?
Well, for one, the contaminant criteria doesn't look at contaminants that are relevant to the concept of discard. And the containment criteria isn't related, doesn't do any work in showing that the material is more like a valuable commodity than a waste.
Okay, so you have a two-part argument, right?
Well,
discard means discard. This isn't discarded. And even if it has some space, some flexibility in it, the legitimacy criteria aren't sufficient. Right?
We do. And on the discarded point, mm-hmm. I'd also point out that our argument also relies on the Clean Air Act, because EPA's broad exclusion of tires and used oil unlawfully overrides text in the Clean Air Act. And this matters because Congress
Which provision is that?
It's in Section 7429G1B.
Yeah, which says what?
Well, there Congress established a narrow exclusion for a certain set of units that burn used oil and tires.
Mm-hmm.
EPA's broad exclusion of tires and used oil from being wastes at all allows any unit to burn those materials without being considered a solid waste incineration unit. And then they're not subject to the highly protective air emission standards that Congress required. Congress recognized that waste could be burned and could be burned productively, but it required that that waste burning be subject to protective air emission standards because the burning of waste releases harmful toxins. And by allowing any unit to burn waste without being subject to those standards, EPA is overriding Congress's policy choice, and it's rendering the text of that exclusion superfluous. And when we raised this in comments, EPA simply said that it didn't think this part of the Clean Air Act was relevant, and it refused to consider it. And that's unlawful because EPA has to interpret these related statutes together. And that's especially the case because Congress made close textual ties between them. EPA's lawyers tried to defend the tire and used oil exceptions by claiming EPA has authority to expand the statutory exclusion and by relying on legislative history, but the NRDC case has already rejected exactly those lines of argument. I'd like to move on to the second question,
sure.
The second broad way that this is illegal, which is the processing exemption, which allows discarded things to become not discarded so long as they're physically or chemically processed, and then eventually get burned as fuel. This processing exemption also violates this court's case law, RCRA, and the Clean Air Act. Three times this court's made clear that a waste remains waste when it's processed for use as fuel. Used oil recyclers collect waste oil from service stations. They process it, and they sell it. This court has held that the processed used oil is waste under RCRA when it's sold for use as fuel. It's unchanged and thus still waste afterward when it's burned in energies at last recovered. The Clean Air Act confirms that the processing exemption is illegal. Congress excluded certain units burning tires and used oil, as I said, from being solid waste incineration units, but it expressly refused to extend that exclusion to units burning refuse-derived fuel. And EPA's lawyers claim that refuse-derived fuel is only fuel derived from municipal solid waste. We disagree with that, but even if they're right, the processing exemption is still unlawful.
I just have a big picture question for you.
Sure.
Are you basically questioning the statute's balancing of discard versus recycling? I mean, is it your position that there shouldn't be any recycling?
No, certainly not. Oh. But our position is that Congress thought that there should be energy recovery from solid waste.
Yeah.
But when there's energy recovery from solid waste,
right,
it needs to be subject to protective air emission standards. And
right,
when you're
but aren't they? In a legitimate, if in a situation where a material is used properly for fuel, isn't the burning of that fuel subject to emission standards?
They're not nearly as protective emission standards.
So your theory is then that it's okay to have and I'm just asking the policy view here, that however it's disposed of, whether it's simply burned or whether it's used in fuel, it should be subject to the same strict emission standards.
That's how Congress set up RCRA and the Clean Air Act. When you're recovering energy from waste, you recover it by burning it. If you process the waste so that it burns better, you haven't recovered the energy yet. You only get the energy when you burn the waste. So processing the waste is just a step in the overall recovery process. This is just like what the court held three times in AMC 1, API 1, and ABR, that when waste motor oil is collected from service stations where it's been discarded, this court has held, and it's processed, and then it's sold for use as fuel. All through that process, it remains discarded and subject to EPA's jurisdiction to regulate as a discarded material. And
of course, we did say in AMC, in one of these AMC cases, that the term discard was ambiguous.
And in ABR, the court said that that case couldn't overrule AMC1's clear holding. And in API 2, the court reiterated that the term discarded unambiguously has its plain meaning of thrown out, abandoned, or disposed of. If a material is thrown out, abandoned, or disposed of, it has to be treated as waste, and it has to be treated as waste from soup to nuts until energy or a material product is recovered from it.
Okay.
And if the court has no further questions.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Norman Ray from the Department of Justice, representing EPA. With me at council table is Alan Karpian from EPA's Office of General Counsel. In this case, the EPA defined criteria for determining which materials are non-hazardous secondary materials, are solid waste when burned as fuel, and which are not. And they used the same criteria that the court found reasonable in the Safe Food and Fertilizer case, when the court found that a hazardous waste, KO61, could be utilized as zinc, as a recycling. And the criteria it looked at, and the same criteria that this rule is based on, are how the material is managed, i.e., is it managed as a product as opposed to being managed as a waste? What is the content? Does it have legitimate fuel content or materials content? And third, are the level of contaminants compatible with the use as a fuel. And in applying that criteria, EPA, in some cases, simply articulated the legitimacy criteria and stated that materials that met them under certain circumstances, if they were used by the generator or if their materials would need it, or that EPA could make further determinations, and it made specific determinations that a few materials, such as used tires, met legitimacy criteria when managed under a state tire program, and therefore were not solid waste. Now, petitioner's primary argument is that there's something, and this court has repeatedly recognized that materials can be recycled, and even in the hazardous waste context, say foods is certainly one in the Association of Battery Recycling case, the court stated that secondary materials destined for recycling are, quote, obviously not disposed of, thrown away. API 2, the court held that oil removed from a primary treatment unit is not a solid waste. This court has recognized repeatedly that there is a distinction between materials that are in some kind of recycling process than materials that are being thrown away. And
what about the petitioner's argument that, at least with respect to scrap tires and used oil, there's a difference here because it's a consumer that's essentially discarding those materials in the ordinary sense, and it's very different from the cases that you're citing?
Well, Your Honor, it's a false distinction. First of all, there's nothing in the statute that distinguishes between something that consumers handle versus something that an industrial process uses. And secondly, this distinction is what they've postulated as a two-step process, that the consumer disposes of something and then it gets used, is false. That's not the way it works. It's actually a single process. If you go to take your car in to get new tires, they take the tires off and it immediately goes into this system for reuse of the tires. It's just systems that are run by states, and the determination is limited to tires that are recycled under state tire reuse programs. The same with used oil. If you go and have your oil removed, changed, it goes directly into the recycling program. It's not a two-step process. It's a single process. The material never stops being a product.
What about tires that, on Earth Day are fished out at the Anacostia River or other places and stacked up and then, sent someplace for recycling?
Those tires are not included within the determination. Tires removed from tire piles, tires that are pulled out of the river, tires that have undeniably been previously discarded by being landfilled or thrown in the river are actually not included. They can be processed, and if they meet the requirements for processing and then meet the criteria, which is the way many, the enormous tire piles that we used to have that have been gradually whittled down through state programs have been eliminated, then they can be used as fuel. But the tires, the determination in the rule that used tires managed under state tire recycling programs doesn't apply to those kind of tires. It only applies to tires that certainly never leave the realm of commerce, but they go immediately from being used on a vehicle to being put into the chain to be produced into fuel. And the same is true of used oil, that the statute has a specific program for regulating used oil. EPA, used oil has a specific definition in the statute and in the regulations, and under those regulations, EPA developed criteria for distinguishing between on-specification and off-specification used oil, depending upon the characteristics and the contaminant levels. And on-specification oil for many years has been held not to be subject to further regulation.
And your response to Mr. Johnson's argument about the statute is that these are not discarded.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Your response to the petitioner's argument about the plain language of the statute is that these are not discarded.
That's right, Your Honor.
They're not discarded because it's a continuous process.
That's right, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Analogous to the continuous, it's not exactly the same as the situation in AMC1 where the court was looking at a continuous manufacturing process, but it's the same idea. These materials from the point, they're never thrown away. They're never discarded. They go right from one use to another use. so they never become a solid waste. If they became a solid waste in the middle, these particular provisions that we're talking about don't apply. And let me briefly address AMC1 and the discussion there about used oil. The court there was not considering whether used oil was a solid waste, and particularly was not considering whether used oil that is found to be on specification by used oil recyclers was a crime. It simply was citing to used oil to reference to an argument that EPA had made that the used oil provisions in AMC1, EPA had argued that materials, essentially an argument much like what petitioners are making here, that once a material was no longer being used for its original purpose, and these were materials produced in the mineral processing industry and materials that were produced at petroleum refineries, EPA had said these materials were solid waste, even though the manufacturer was putting them back into the refining process. And the court said, no, that's taking it too far, that we're not quite sure what else the statute might mean, but it clearly these materials, which are clearly still in process, still being used, even if they're being used for something different, are not solid waste. And EPA made a number of arguments to argue that, pointing to different parts of the statute, and one was used oil. And all the court said, it assumed that the used oil was a waste, and briefly described the used oil process, and then said they're burned in boilers, indicating that the court's understanding was that this material, used oil, once it was processed, was not, in fact, a solid waste. On processing, again, Your Honor, the court, in the Safe Food case, the court held that hazardous waste, KO61, could be processed into a product as long as the product met the proper criteria. And there's no reason why that does not apply directly here to non-hazardous waste in this case. The petitioner's argument concerning specific exclusions in 774.29 is also not on point. The court there Congress there was concerned about the units, the type of units. It was alternative energy producers, cogeneration units that even included air curtain incinerators, which is something that burned wood. And it was looking at, and it was attempting to, this was during the period when the energy industry was being restructured, that the purpose of these types of facilities had been authorized by PURPA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Policies Act, 78, a few years earlier. And Congress was clearly focused on not impeding the development of these alternative energy sources. And the exclusion that's in the statute is actually in some ways broader than the determination that EPA has made. For instance, the tires that are pulled out of the river or that are extracted from these tire piles would be included in that exclusion, whereas they're not included in the determination. EPA's determination, while it encompasses perhaps a broader range of units, is a smaller range of tires. The criteria, the legitimacy criteria do address the issues. The contaminants are those that are regulated under the Clean Air Act, which is consistent with the purpose of this rule, which is to determine what materials are solid waste when burned. And the rationale is, are they the same as fuels? So in other words, is this the same as coal or the same as oil in terms of its contaminations? And that's why it makes sense to focus on it. And the regulation does address the management, the legitimacy criteria, specifically say the non-hazardous secondary material must be managed as a valuable commodity. And then it issues several specific examples and discussions depending upon whether there's analogous fuel or not. And as was explained in the preamble, what EPA means there is that it has to be stored and managed in a way that preserves its fuel value as well as protecting the environment.
Is it a valuable commodity if you have to pay someone to take it off your hands?
It may be, Your Honor. It's a valuable person to the it may be valuable to them. It may be cheaper to you to pay to somebody who's going to use it as fuel so it has value than it would be to dispose of it. Because so it's still a valuable commodity. And if someone is taking it off your hands,
how is something valuable if I've got to pay someone to get rid of it?
It's valuable.
It's not very valuable to me.
It may not be valuable to you, but it certainly would be. And this is, again, the transfer situation is one in which EPA does make the case-by-case determinations. This is not, we'll talk about it in the second part of the argument, but that's where EPA does make that determination on a case-by-case basis. But it's valuable to the person that you're selling or paying to take it away because it's a fuel. But again, that's a determination that EPA makes on a case-by-case basis. it may be a valuable fuel product, and it may be a lot cheaper to you to pay someone to take it as a fuel. And the reason it's cheaper to you than as opposed to disposing of it in an incinerator or through some other process, and the reason that it costs you less is because it has value to the person taking it as a fuel. How much value it is obviously depends on the price and who pays whom, but it doesn't change the fact that it's valuable in the sense that it has fuel value. And that's the point that Congress, you know, this statute is called the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. One of the main purposes of the statute was to encourage the reuse and recovery of materials. And the types of programs, particularly the types of programs that petitioners are challenging, the used oil collection programs, the tire programs, the use of clean wood as a fuel, are not part of the solid waste problem. To go back to AMC 1, what the court said was something only becomes a waste when it becomes part of the solid waste problem. These programs are part of the solid waste solution. They take tires, for instance, that used to be piled in enormous piles that would catch fire and burn for days, or used oil that would be put down the drain, and turn it into a usable product. And that's the value, and that's what EPA is trying to address here, is that use of recycling.
Okay. Anything else?
No. Any further questions, John?
Okay, thank you. Mr. Green?
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Douglas Green, counsel for industry interveners on behalf of EPA. The petitioner's argument is flawed because, as I think as Judge Santel just suggested, it basically doesn't consider and is directly at odds with one of RCRA's key policy objectives, which is avoiding the needless land disposal of waste which can otherwise be used for their energy value. Now, as this court advised in AMC 1, the term discard must be determined by the purposes of the particular legislation. And therefore, the term discard in this case, as in that case, should not be construed in a manner that is inconsistent with RCRA's goal of promoting the conversion of solid waste to usable energy. EPA's rule is faithful to that objective. Now, what the agency has done here with qualified secondary, non-hazardous secondary materials, is that it can't discern what the intent of million consumers are with post-consumer products, with used oil or scrap tires. What the agency has done, however, is that it has stepped back and asked, in these qualified circumstances, where used oil is managed pursuant to the agency's long-standing used oil program, recycling program, and where scrap tires are collected in comprehensive state tire collection programs to ensure, one, that the materials are in fact handled like commodities, two, do they in fact have heating value, and three, are they in fact comparable to the virgin fuels that they're going to replacing? Are those materials part of the solid waste problem? And the answer is obvious in EPA's view, and we agree, no. Discard is not occurring in those circumstances. If these materials are collected in programs outside of these type of qualified conditions, then discard may in fact be going on, but not in these circumstances. And as EPA correctly argues, this really isn't different than this court's decision in Safe Food and Fertilizer, which involved a hazardous secondary material. Our concern with petitioner's position is that it really will reverse years of successful recycling programs that, as EPA just explained, have actually been solving the problem. Scrap tire collection programs, used oil recycling programs, are programs that have taken secondary materials that historically were part of the solid waste disposal problem, were being disposed of, and have converted, consistent with the statute's objective, these materials from the waste management world to the products world, again, provided that they are collected and managed in accordance with a defined set of circumstances. The practical effect.
What about petitioner's argument that all of that occurs pursuant to inadequate emission standards?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Their argument is that all of that occurs pursuant to what they view as inadequate protective emission standards.
Well,
isn't that their argument?
if that's their argument, then that's something that has to be addressed under the Clean Air Act. This issue, the issue here is whether these materials, when collected and managed in the specified set of conditions as set forth by EPA, are discarded. And EPA has correctly determined, consistent with protecting human health and the environment, but also promoting the statute's policy objective of avoiding the needless land disposal of secondary materials that can be used for their energy value, has said in this case these aren't discarded. If, when burned under any applicable Clean Air Act regulations, petitioners have concerns with those regulations, that's where they ought to be looking, not under RCRA, where the agency's authority is to determine whether discard has occurred. Our concern is that what will happen here is that these recycling programs will be reversed. The bottom line is, as even EPA's record shows, is that if these materials are all of a sudden, if we wave a magic wand over these fuel products and call them the solid waste, and you can only combust those in an incinerator, guess what's going to happen? They aren't going to be combusted for energy recovery. EPA's own record shows that once a unit is called an incinerator, for a host of reasons, those units stop burning the material that caused them to become incinerators and look to alternative, basically virgin fuels. And that would be inconsistent, we submit, to the policy objectives of RCRA. I see my time is up.
Okay, thank you. Did Mr. Johnson have any time left? You can take 2 minutes if you'd like it.
I would.
Thanks. Go ahead.
So first, EPA relies on collection, but household waste is collected just like tires are collected, just like used oil is collected. EPA's arguments would apply to regular household waste and make that undiscarded, and that's just not a tenable reading of the statute.
Well, just focus on the last argument both lawyers made with respect to the purpose of RCRA and what effect on the recovery aspect of RCRA would occur if you were to prevail here.
The general purposes
What's your response to that?
The general purposes of RCRA have to yield in face of the text of the statutes. And the text of the two statutes taken together says that if a material is discarded in its unambiguous sense of the word, if it's been thrown out, abandoned, or disposed of, then it must be subject to these protective air emission standards.
Okay. All right.
And EPA is letting sources burn these materials without being subject to these materials when they've been thrown out, without being subject to these protective air emission standards. ILCO, I want to jump back to the collection and continuous process argument. The ILCO case from the 11th Circuit, which this court cited approvingly in API 2 and which also relied on this court's case law, pointed out that previously discarded material remains waste, even though it may be recycled. EPA relies on Safe Food, but Safe Food was a very different circumstance. That was a firm-to-firm transfer where people actually bought and sold for money. People who held the hazardous secondary material there actually sold it for money to the reprocessors. So that's just not
the point. So is that test, if you don't get money for it, then it's discarded?
If you don't get money for it and you don't hold it like a valuable commodity?
Being transferred. If you don't get money for it, then it's discarded, no matter what other factor involved.
No, the test is if it's being thrown out, whether you don't get money.
We're trying to get whether it meets the test or not.
No, I understand that.
Listen to what I'm asking. Is the test, when it's transferred, if you don't get money for it, then it's discarded?
That is a highly significant factor in the test. It's not necessarily dispositive, but if you're...
So if it's not dispositive, then it would be possible for the transfer to occur without monetary consideration and
there
still
may
not be a discard.
There may be circumstances where that's possible, but EPA's exemption of these materials sweeps in circumstances where it's not possible. If EPA can justify a narrower exemption...
You would concede that it's possible to make a transfer without monetized consideration coming back and it not be a discard. I had the sense when you were up the first time that you were making the position, and I thought the same thing now. You're taking the position that if you don't get money for it, it's a discard. But that's not your position?
In the circumstances at issue here where people actually have to pay to properly dispose of their tires, that's a discard. If you give a tire as a gift, that would not be a discard. But I think it's clear that in the circumstances of this case, there are that there's not a discard. And EPA's exemption, EPA's broad exemption, wraps those tires into being not discarded. And as a result, the whole exemption has to fall under this court's case law. If EPA wants to justify, to try to justify a narrower exemption, it needs to try to do that on remand. If I can move quickly to the processing argument.
You have one sentence. You're over your time.
Okay.
Just say what you want to say.
EPA admits that it's expanding the exclusion to new units, units that the Congress did not allow to be not, sorry. There's a lot of knots in that sentence.
Yeah.
It was actually naughty. EPA admitted that it is expanding the exclusion in Section 7429 G1B beyond what Congress provided. This Court's already held in NRDC that that's not permissible.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So let's go on to the second, the industry challenge. Am I at the right point? Okay. All right. And Mr. Bell and Mr. Knight are going to split this argument, right? Okay. Let's go.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Chris Bell, and I'm speaking for the industry petitioners on the third-party transfer issue. And let me begin with how we believe the rule should be changed. Looking at the regulatory language
you
on
page... To win your case, you need to start with a statute and why the current rule is not faithful to it. You may have a much better view about how it should be changed, but you're only going to win if you can convince us that the agency's interpretation of the statute is not acceptable. So maybe you want to start there.
Certainly, Your Honor. This issue turns on the meaning of other discarded material in the statute, and I think all of the parties agree to that. And EPA asserts that transfers of secondary materials that meet the legitimacy criteria to be used as fuels are discards. And in the context of their rule, EPA has said that if I'm an on-site generator, say if I'm a facility and I have some kind of a hydrocarbon, type of a stream, and I burn it on-site in my boiler as a fuel, and I meet the four legitimacy criteria, valuable commodity and all that, that is not a discard. If part of that same material I pipe over to my neighbor's facility for the exact same use, that the act of the transfer transforms that exact same activity into a discard.
I thought it was not a discard if it was processed in accordance with the legitimacy criteria. Isn't that true?
If it's processed
in accordance with the legitimacy criteria.
You raise a good point, Your Honor, and I think
looking at the regulation.
Right, but
if it is
processed and then transferred, in that situation, the material is already considered discarded. So for that part of the rule, EPA has said, if you discard something, then process it, then transfer it, then that is not a discard. On the other hand, if I have something that meets all of the legitimacy criteria but does not need processing, which, by the way, is frequently the case in sort of big interconnected petrochemical-type facilities where you have pipes connecting various kinds of production units, if there is no prior processing required...
Could you step back?
Yes,
sir.
Could
you just give us an example, just a very specific example of the problem you're identifying?
Okay.
Just one clear example.
Okay. One clear example is in petrochemical facilities,
right,
when they're processing those kinds of materials. they get a wide variety of what are called hydrocarbon streams that are not the primary product but can have a variety of values. They can have a value as an ingredient into some other production unit, or...
Well, if that's in the generator's production unit, then you don't have a problem, right?
Correct.
It's only if it's transferred. So I asked for an example of a situation where a generator produces a hydrocarbon. That's what you're talking about, right?
Right.
And that hydrocarbon is transferred to someone else.
Right.
Used in a fuel, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that has to be consistent with the legitimacy criteria, right?
Correct.
And then it's not considered a discard. So what's your problem with that?
If I have that hydrocarbon pipe go to my boiler, it's not a problem.
Okay.
If I have too much of that material,
and
so I sell it to my neighbor's petrochemical facility for burning in their boiler, and it's not processed, then it becomes a discard under EPA's rules.
Because what in the statute? I mean, what this distinction the agency is making seems so intuitive. Stricter standards if the transfer is to a third party. So you have to show us something in the statute that prohibits the agency from making. I know you don't like it, but to win, you have to show us what in the word discard prohibits the agency from doing that.
Well, this court has held that the plain meaning of the word discard is abandon, throw away, or dispose.
Yeah.
And our position is that, particularly in a market economy, transferring or selling something in plain language is not throwing away, disposing.
But the agency says it's not a discard if it's reprocessed in some form in accordance with the legitimacy criteria.
If it isn't, then
they're going to treat it as discarded. I don't see where you find anything in the language that prohibits that, and B, it just seems such an intuitive position to me.
I guess our position is that, as this court said in Safe Food and Fertilizer, where it said that firm-to-firm transfers are hardly a good indicia of a discard, as that term is ordinarily understood, and we don't think that EPA has backed up its intuition with anything in the record.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way EPA has written the legitimacy criteria do not require processing. The legitimacy requirements are a completely separate issue from the issue of processing.
Well, are you challenging the legitimacy criteria also?
No, sir, we're not.
Well,
we're saying that if you transfer something that meets the legitimacy...
Your whole argument, then, remember, you've got to make this argument through the lens that we have to look at the case. And either you're arguing that this violates the statute, which you are, or if my question was, if we don't think this does violate the statute, are you challenging the legitimacy criteria? And you just said no. So do you see my point? You moved your argument to a challenge to the legitimacy criteria. I didn't see that in your brief.
No, we are not challenging the legitimacy criteria.
So your whole case hangs on discard, right?
Correct. Okay. And we believe that the legitimacy criteria do not require reprocessing or processing a material. If a material meets the legitimacy criteria and it is, for example, burned on site without processing, that's not a discard. And so if I have a material that's perfectly useful as a fuel, is a valuable commodity, does not have unusual contaminants, has a meaningful heating value, in other words, it doesn't need to be reprocessed, then it meets the legitimacy criteria. Then at that point, EPA's position is that it meets the legitimacy criteria. The only thing that's different is the transfer.
Would it be possible for you at that point to seek a petition the EPA for a determination that this is not in fact discarded?
Yes, it would be possible, but we don't think that EPA has the authority under RCRA to require the regulated community to petition EPA regarding materials that are not discarded in the first instance.
That's what you would be asking them to determine, that it should not be treated as a discarded material, if you petition.
Correct.
If it were being processed, they would have additional evidence of its non-discarded nature that they do not have if it's not present. So why is it unreasonable or in violation of any of the statutes for them to say, well, you'll have to petition us for treatment as a non-discard if you want to use one, a transfer that isn't present? Why is that unreasonable?
Well, first, of course, if the material is processed, then you wouldn't have to go to EPA
That's right. That's what I said.
Correct.
I don't think you're understanding me by your response. Mm-hmm. I already said that if they have the evidence to process, they have that evidence to indicate it's not discouraged. If they don't have the evidence to process, why is it unreasonable for you to have to petition to establish that it's not discouraged?
Because we don't believe that a transfer by itself, as this court said in Safe Food and Fertilizers, that, you know, where the court said firm-to-firm transfers are hardly good indicia of discard. And when we talk about the plain language of the word discard, throw away, dispose of, abandon, you know, we don't think that the word transfer, which are the economic transactions upon which the whole nation's economy is based, that those transfers by themselves are discards, and we don't think the record supports that as well. And EPA cannot base a rule simply based on, well, we believe that those might be a discard. They have to have a record that supports that, which is what this court said in the API case, and they don't have that record.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Knight?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jeff Knight, and I will be addressing the sewage sludge exclusion on behalf of NACWA and the other municipal petitioners. Your Honors, RCRA excludes sewage sludge from solid waste regulation, and the statute does not give EPA any authority to alter that exclusion. Section 1004.27.
Could you just start with the statute with me? It says. The term solid waste, this is the one we're looking at, right? The term solid waste means sludge from a waste treatment plant. Isn't that what it says?
Yeah, so the definition of sewage sludge, definition of solid waste.
Are we looking at the same statute? It says the term solid waste means any garbage, refuge, sludge from a waste treatment plant, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I read that and I say, that's solid waste.
It includes all of those things except the following.
Yeah.
And then it reads, but does not include solid or dissolved material in domestic sewage.
Yeah, right. So we have to make sense of both of those, right?
Correct.
Okay, so and why isn't it?
So when
it comes out of your house, it's sewage. When it comes out of the treatment plant, it's sludge. Isn't that what this statute means?
No, we don't think so.
Tell me why.
The definition of sludge is in the statute is in 1004.26A. And that definition includes all types of sludge, including specifically sludge at a municipal wastewater treatment plant.
So under your theory, what happens to the words sludge from a waste treatment plant?
It is included if it's a different type of wastewater treatment plant, an industrial plant or a commercial plant. But the same definition excludes certain wastewater flows, including all solid or dissolved material in domestic sewage. So this is a definitional exclusion from what is initially a broad inclusion of sludge from wastewater treatment plants generally. There are many types, industrial, commercial, and municipal. But then the definition expressly
excludes.
Just tell me
in very simple terms, what sludge from a waste treatment plant, under your theory, would be included in the term solid waste?
An industrial plant, wastewater treatment plant.
Sludge from what?
So if a factory has a
waste treatment plant, that would be included.
So sludge from a waste treatment plant can include any type of waste treatment plant, whether it be municipal or it be commercial or industrial. But the same sentence, the definition of solid waste, then expressly excludes all solid or dissolved material in domestic sewage.
In domestic sewage?
So it specifically then focuses on, it, domestic sewage, but it focuses on the solid or dissolved materials in
domestic. I still don't understand what's left of this phrase under your theory.
Well, the ordinary meaning of the word material includes everything of which something is composed.
Just give me an example. Just what sludge from a waste treatment plant, give me an example of sludge from a waste treatment plant that would, under your theory, be considered solid waste. That's all I want.
Sludge from a factory.
You just told me that waste treatment plants from sludge from what?
Sludge from a factory, for example, or an industrial facility, but
not
sludge
not a waste,
from a municipal.
Where does it say that in the statute?
Well,
It says sludge from a waste treatment plant. It doesn't say sludge from a factory's waste treatment plant.
But waste treatment plant is a broad category, which includes multiple types. And 26A, the term sludge under 26A, means...
And you think this is a Chevron 1 issue? You think the statute's crystal clear?
The statute is clear on this point.
Really?
This court's precedent in cases like Goldstein v. SEC says, even if Congress uses a term that is susceptible to multiple dictionary meanings, does not mean that term is that EPA may choose any of those terms in interpreting the statute. This court and the agency still looks to the context. And what EPA has done here is said that the exclusion only applies for the water that comes into a treatment plant, and that the materials in that water are no longer excluded unless they are located in that water.
Back to what you were discussing with Judge Taylor, what is the full code citation to the exemption for municipal wastewater, domestic wastewater?
The domestic sewage exclusion is at 1004.27, which is the...
All right. Give me the full code citation.
I'm sorry, I have the public law here.
Yeah, I know, and we don't have those lying around you.
Sorry, 16.
We noticed that lots of briefs, the council just.
Yeah, sorry.
So do you have a full code citation?
I do not in front of me, but I will get that for you when I step up for response. Sorry.
All right. So, do you have anything else you want to cover?
Time
is up.
So EPA tells us that the exclusion doesn't apply for two reasons. One, that the exclusion only applies to the water that comes into the treatment plant. And that is not the case factually. First, it isn't factually correct that sewage sludge does not contain water that comes to the treatment plant.
Mr. Chairman, you need to wind up your argument. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Language.
Okay. We got that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. You and your colleagues decided to split your time, so, you know. Let's see, EPA, Mr. Rave.
Good morning once again, Your Honors. I think, let me just quickly, because I think we can address this sludge issue extremely quickly, by looking at another statutory provision.
Why do you have to go beyond the one I was quoting?
Well, because there's one that makes it even clearer.
Oh, really?
Which is...
Excellent.
Which I think we did cite in our brief.
Yeah.
Code cite. So this one is 42 U.S.C. 6903-26A, and this says, the term sludge means any solid, semi-solid, or liquid waste generated from a municipal, commercial, or industrial wastewater treatment plant.
Right.
So it clearly means, the statute clearly includes sludge from a municipal wastewater treatment plant, which is a sewage plant, within the term sludge, and therefore, yes, the statute is certainly clear, but what is clear is that sludge from a municipal wastewater treatment plant is a solid waste by definition. And it's not the same material as what's suspended. It's not material that's suspended or dissolved in wastewater. It's a separate, newly generated material that is produced in the process of treating the solid waste. And it's by definition in the statute of a solid waste.
Well, what does that exemption mean that your colleague was referring to in his argument?
It means that, for instance, if you have an industrial wastewater that contains some metals concentrations or something like that, RCRA does not regulate that wastewater. That wastewater is regulated under the Clean Water Act. requires it to be treated to meet treatment standards to then discharge the effluent. So it's to avoid double regulation of the wastewater itself, not to regulate the sludge, not to exempt the sludge from regulation that results from that treatment. And that's, I think, the best way to reconcile the statute, which is trying to make absolutely clear that even though there may be constituents, perhaps even hazardous constituents, in wastewater, they were to be regulated by the Clean Water Act and not the river. And then the state. So it's a division of sort of authority between the two statutes. Any other questions on the sludge issue? Okay. Let me turn then to the transfer issue. First of all, again, as in their briefs, petitioners have yet to identify a single waste that they claim is misclassified under this provision. In the briefs, they talk about waste managed at sulfur recovery facilities, but they don't identify any waste stream. It's not the spent sulfuric acid, because that's an ingredient. That's not subject to this provision. So they haven't identified any injury, and they haven't identified any way in which the regulation misregulates. Secondly, this provision applies to, as I think as Judge Sintel was getting at in his questions, the only thing this provision that we're talking about does is that it requires that if you take a material and you transfer it to someone else, a secondary material, you have to get a determination from EPA that it's not a waste. And that's a reasonable provision, and EPA has made such determinations. You can get them either on a case-by-case basis or you can get them on a categorical basis. They made a couple of them in the rule. There are other rulings pending. And the record does show that many of the problems associated with recycling and management have to do with transfers and mismanagement during the transfer. And there is less indicia of control. If a generator takes the material and reuses it itself, it seems clear there's this high indicia that it's a valuable material. But if it's transferred to someone else, that's somewhat less. And EPA has taken the precaution, as Joe Sintel was noting in his questions, of requiring the person wanting to combust the waste or the generator, whoever chooses to do so, comes to EPA and gets a determination. And that's reasonable under the statute, given the history of issues and problems associated with such transfers. I just want to make it really clear that EPA has not said that the mere fact of transfer constitutes disposal. The question being asked here is, when does combustion constitute disposal? You know, these are materials that are going to be destroyed by combustion. In some cases, where it meets the legitimacy criteria, where the material has fuel value, where it's being managed in a proper way, where it's not contaminated, EPA has determined that that's recycling, those products are fuels, and that they should be managed as product fuels. In other cases, something is transferred that doesn't meet those criteria, then combustion is disposal. So it's not the transfer itself that constitutes disposal. What constitutes disposal is the combustion if it is a solid waste. Unless the court has any questions, I think.
No.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Good morning again. May it please the court, Seth Johnson for Environmental Interveners. The issue here is whether discard has ever occurred, and there's actually an important point of agreement. If a secondary material has been indisputably discarded, industry seems to agree that transferring it from one firm to another doesn't make it not discarded. So the question here is whether EPA set up a lawful and rational.
But it doesn't make it discarded either, does it?
It may and it may not. EPA has set up a lawful approach to determining whether a firm-to-firm transfer here constitutes discard. And industry hasn't shown that there's any conflict between the scheme EPA established for those materials and RCRA or this court's case law. I just want to add one quick citation to what my colleague, Mr. Rave, said. Industry claims that EPA can't even establish a process for transferred secondary materials to avoid discard status, but this court has already upheld EPA's authority to establish an exemption process like this in the context of regulating potential hazardous wastes. It did that in API 2, 216 F3rd, 50 at 58 to 59. and there, so long as the conditions EPA applied, were met, the material wouldn't be found to be discarded. Here, too, so long as the conditions EPA established are met, the material won't be found to be discarded. It's a flexible process, and industry doesn't like how it's set up, but it hasn't shown that it's unlawful or irrational. In its briefs, industry also makes a lot of policy arguments. They're not relevant because Congress is the one that sets the policy, and it set it in RCRA and the Clean Air Act. If you burn waste for any purpose, you've got to meet protective air emission standards. Those standards are 2 decades overdue, and they'll reduce pollution for millions of people. They're based on what sources have actually achieved. So they're strong, but they're achievable. People have actually achieved these in real life. And the industry hasn't provided a reason to believe that waste burners wouldn't clean up their emissions enough in order to meet those standards. And industry's policy argument is especially lacking because EPA has already drastically reduced the number of units that are subject to the most protective standards through this rule. As a result, many sources can be classified as area source boilers, and those standards only lead to, at best, 2% reductions in overall emissions of particulate matter, carbon monoxide, hydrogen chloride, and mercury. And for mercury, it's actually 0% reductions for area sources, and that's on 4 tons of mercury, 0% reduction. So if the court has no questions.
No. Thank you. Did Mr. Petitioners have any time left? Okay, let's see. You can each take 1 minute if you'd like it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Turning to the questions, again, that you were posing, the example that we want to focus on is a secondary material that meets the legitimacy criteria that is transferred to a third party for the same use that the on-site generator would be putting it to use for. And we don't think that there's a basis in the record or the law for EPA distinguishing between those two situations or the situation where if I'm a generator and I'm transferring secondary material to a third party for use as an ingredient and it meets the legitimacy criteria, there EPA seems to have no problem with that third party transfer. That's allowed. So there's that one situation that's highlighted. And we don't think that in that situation, the transfer alone, where all of the legitimacy criteria are being met, qualifies as the plain meaning okay. of the word discard under the statute.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Knight, I actually have a question for you.
Yes.
Mr. Rave cited...
Is this from Knight?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I apologize.
Mr. Knight.
Yes.
Yeah. On sludge, right?
Yes.
You're sludge.
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Okay. Sorry about that. That's your issue, right?
It is my issue.
Okay. Mr. Rave cited, 6903-26A.
That's
sludge means any solid, semi-solid, et cetera, generated from municipal, commercial, or industrial wastewater treatment plant.
That's correct.
Right, but...
And 6903-27, which defines solid waste, expressly excludes...
No, wait, before you go there, you were telling me that the distinction before, when I was asking you what's left of that language in the statute about treatment plants, is that, well, if factory treatment plants would be
yes.
considered, not municipal ones.
This says
municipal, commercial, or industrial wastewater treatment plants.
Yes, these are two different definitions that are used for different purposes within the RCRA framework.
Or any other such waste having such similar characteristics.
Yes. So
okay, what's the difference?
So these are two different definitions that have different purposes within the RCRA framework. 26A, which defines sludge, clearly includes sewage sludge because sewage sludge comes from a municipal wastewater treatment plant. However, the defined term sludge is used for multiple purposes in the RCRA framework. It's actually more than 20 times
throughout the statute. So here's an example of where the use of the term sludge is relevant to domestic sewage and to sewage sludge, but it's not relevant to the definition of solid waste. 6982G directs the administrator to conduct studies of sound sludge landfilling practices and other alternative uses, including energy recovery. So it makes perfect sense for the Congress to have included sewage sludge and municipal wastewater treatment plants within the definition of sludge under 26A, while at the same time excluding domestic sewage and sewage sludge from that definition of solid waste in 26.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're done, right? Yeah. Case is submitted. Thank you all.